Everybody, welcome to the show. This is Becoming Ultra. Probably share this over on Athlete on Fire as well. We have Luis Escobar on the show today. I had a chance to sit down with him out in Tahoe a couple months ago, and just now releasing this bad boy. He and I got to discuss some of his adventures coming up in Bhutan. I think he's been over there since we've talked, so that's pretty interesting, as well as some running festivals that he's a part of. Kind of what the running world means to him and what he's doing with Spartan right now. It's all pretty cool, pretty interesting. Got a chat with him on our last day in Tahoe out for the Spartan Media Fest, which was just a blast. So he's an awesome guy. He's been around this world for quite a while, and he had a lot of interesting things to say. So hope you guys enjoy, and hopefully you're out there on the run while you listen to us. That always makes us feel better. Thanks a lot.
Luis, what's up?
Good morning, Scott. It has been an epic weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We're here in Squaw Valley, California for the Spartan Race World Championships. And I've been here for several days helping set up a race course for the 10K race, 10K trail race that we conducted yesterday. And it's just been awesome. This place is magical.
It is.
Are you liking it? Are you enjoying your time here?
I mean, the backdrop is awesome. Yeah. It feels like Colorado, but the landscape's a little different than a lot of the mountains in Colorado.
What's interesting about this weekend is I got here on Tuesday, so we've been here for a few days, and it's been sunny and warm. I mean warm, like shirts off warm. And then yesterday, we lined up more than 500 people to race this 10K race. A little cloudy and starting to cool off for sure, and it looked like maybe it was going to rain a little bit. And as soon as we started the race at 2:30 p.m. and about a mile into it, you know, about 15 minutes into the race, it wasn't snowing, and then all of a sudden, it was snowing.
It opened up.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I mean, up high, we were at the top of the course, which is probably around 8,500 feet, something like that, and that was pretty intense.
Oh, yeah.
Surprisingly.
It was funny because Josue, our buddy who does a lot of stuff with Spartan, mm-hmm. he was like, "Hey, Scott, do you mind sweeping?" And probably 99% of the time, I'd say yes. But I ran the Spartan in the morning. I literally hadn't eaten because we were doing interviews and panels and all this stuff. And I was like, "Dude, if you absolutely need me, I will do this. But I'm starving right now." I was like, "All right, I'll find somebody else." So I went with Ian over to the little tent or the little VIP spot where couches are and stuff. And we sat there, and literally 5 minutes later, the skies just opened up. I was like, "Oh my gosh, the best decision of my day." It was crazy.
It was pretty intense. But you know what? Those type of things, like we were talking about earlier, as long as nobody gets hurt and no one's in any real danger, that weather just is a feature that adds to the experience.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think people were really, really enjoyed it. I was told you last night we were in the restaurant down here, and there's a bar in there, and there was a lot of trail runners with their finishers medals on, and they were retelling the story of the storm that they ran through, and they're super proud of what they did.
So yeah,
it was a good feature. It was a good addition to the event, I think.
I have a good story about you that I'm gonna get into. First thing though, mm-hmm. you introduced yourself as Luis.
Yeah, Luis Escobar. Okay. Yeah, so my name is Luis, is how you spell it. So my name is really Luis, right?
Okay.
But yeah, Luis is good.
Okay. Well, because I've heard people call you
right.
Luis, and you introduce yourself as Luis. I was like, I'm freaking confused.
I just think it's easier for people to say Luis.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we got Luis. And I got to tell a story how you've, from the book that you're in back in, what, 2010? Born to Run?
The book Born to Run?
Yeah, was it 2010?
Yeah, I think it was 2010. The book was written about an adventure down to the Copper Canyons in northern Mexico in 2006.
Right.
And then, it was documented by Christopher McDougall. He was there writing an article for Men's Health magazine. And the article was titled "The Men Who Live Forever." It was about the Tarahumara Indians. And it was about him, Chris, turning 50 and wanting to run a 50-mile race, trail race. So that's how the book started. It was really Chris documenting his journey, turning 50 and running a 50-mile trail run. Yeah. In the Copper Canyons.
Yeah, and I think like our audience, definitely tons of runners. I would venture to bet that 80% of people listening right now have read that book.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I'll set up how you... This is a weird full circle story, okay?
Sure.
So me and my wife, we were married without kids, so it's back when we could actually read a book.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in like a Barnes & Noble out in Colorado or something like that, tatter cover, and we literally pick up the book. We read the whole thing in one sitting.
Wow.
didn't have to pay for it. Sorry, Chris. so we read the whole thing in one sitting. And then, like, literally the next week, we go down to South America for, like, 5 weeks. We're just adventuring around. Mm-hmm. And me and my wife have always been entrepreneurial. Like, when we first – we met on a chairlift. We were coming up with business ideas within, like, a week, all in the health, fitness, running world.
Nice.
And so we're down in South America, and some stuff we were doing we weren't really 100% passionate about. Like, we loved it, but we wanted to try some new things.
Right.
So we sat down. I remember we were, like, in Coroico, Bolivia, like, in the Amazon basin. We're sitting at a cafe, and we're just writing down ideas. And the book was, like, fresh in our head, you know? So we're like, let's put on minimalist 5K. So we got back. We had all the ideas. It was called the Naked Foot 5K. I drew a little sketch of the barefoot with eyes
and
running. So we got back and we put together this concept called the Naked Foot 5K. We had 18 people signed up. I never raced direct in my life. We had 18 people. I was like, oh, 18, whatever. And the venue was free. Those days were gone. And then the morning of, I realized I didn't have a starter finish line. So I printed out a STAR, laminated it, and found some PVC in my house and made the most ghetto start line you've ever seen in your life. Like, if you're over 5'10", you're hitting your head on it. So anyway, the day of, 50 people signed up. So we had 70 people by the end of the day.
Wow.
Which, day of for any of them, it's not too bad. You know? So we were like, coach, like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. People came out for this thing we created. And so much of it was inspired by that book. And then me and Josue, the next day we put out 7 locations that we wanted to do this event at. And Josue is in Austin, and somehow we connected. So he helped RD the Austin event. We were in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And me and Josue have been pretty good friends ever since that endeavor. And then he went off to go RD. You've been doing your photography.
Right.
And we went on into this. You know how in your career, like, you can get in a rabbit hole if you make one decision. It'll, like, seem like, what the hell am I doing in this industry, you know?
Yeah.
So we went in all these rabbit holes, and it's all come full circle. And we just sold off our last running event, like, literally a month ago. So we're not RDing that much anymore, but we're sharing the stories of all these things that happened, and now it's kind of crazy. Like, your name was on the pages, and it just came crazy, weird, full circle.
Everyone is connected in some way or another, especially in the endurance community. Everyone has, a connection to somebody else.
And
somehow or another, you sit down with pretty much anybody that's involved in endurance running, and, you have a friend in common somewhere.
Yeah. There's not, you know, even the cool thing about this community, we were just talking about that, how we've had some of the best runners in the world and best OCR athletes, and there's not a lot of pretense, really. Like, people are just happy to talk. They know what it is.
You know what? The trail runners in particular, they're pretty cool. I've had an opportunity to travel all around the country and beyond, and visiting with runners at races or running events. And everybody wants to share their trail with you. You know, hey, you know, you're coming to town. I want to take you to this trail. I want to take you to this mountain. Let's go do this. Everybody wants to share. And the trail running community is really friendly and open. And it doesn't matter who you're talking to. You know, yesterday we had a podcast interview. And we're talking to, Ian Sharman. And we're talking to Michael Wardy. And these are two guys that are, like, way on the top of the game. And they're as excited as an entry-level runner. You know, they're still into it, and they still like to share their stories. And it's a cool thing to be involved in, because it just people inspire each other.
You know,
you watch an elite athlete, gets you all fired up, makes you want to run. And those guys, those elite athletes, are looking at entry-level runners, mid-pack runners, and they're getting excited and inspired by them. So it's just this crazy circle. It's a good thing.
I don't think I know any professional runner that does not get inspired by the back of Packers, because and the time on feet for those guys is crazy. Like, beginners know, I mean, anybody who's listening right now who's a beginner trail runner or runner in general knows the feeling of having a power hike the last 5, 8, 10 miles, you know, whatever it is, and that time on feet, that wears on you. It's tough.
Or start the run power hiking. You know? We're sitting here right now in Squaw Valley. This is the start of the Western States 100. And I've been involved with that race for a long time as a runner and a photographer. And a good chunk of the pack, they're hiking from the start.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a legit climb.
Immediately this thing goes up four miles up to over 9,000 feet. So a lot of folks just, obviously, they're going to power hike all of that and then you know, run the downhills, kind of shuffle the flats, and work their way to Auburn.
You were when we were coming up in the elevator, you were talking about how your world has been trail running for quite a while with your photography and the races you put on and stuff, and you've kind of, and Spartans put on these trail events as well, and there's kind of a cross pollination, if you will. But what's the biggest difference in culture, and what's the biggest difference in your professional
side? I really can't speak too much about the obstacle course community because I don't know it that well. I've only been involved with Spartan for a year. We've put on, I think, 10 or 12 10Ks and a couple of half marathons across the country this year. And those trail races are in conjunction with the OCR events. We share a start and a finish line. We don't necessarily share the same course. But so what I'm saying is I see the obstacle course events and I see the OCR athletes, and I do interact with them, but I'm not really part of that culture yet. You know, I'm watching it. What I would say the similarities between the trail running community and the obstacle course community is just that, the sense of community and family and support. It's the same kind of thing, OCR, just on a much larger scale. There's a lot of people involved here.
Yeah.
But I see people supporting each other, helping each other on the course, just like trail runners would do. Yeah. Everybody seems pretty cool. The differences, I don't know. I don't know that there's differences. I mean, obviously, the athletic part of it is much different, but as a community, yeah, it's the same.
Pretty close,
yeah. Nice people doing nice things. I mean, you get outdoor people doing outdoor stuff, and, you know, good things happen.
When you look at the logistics of Spartan versus putting together a trail race, doesn't that just like make your blood pressure like spike? Just trying to imagine the level.
Scott, that's one of the reasons why I decided to be part of the Spartan Trail Project is because, and you probably know, I own a few races myself, five little races in the San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara area. And I've been involved with, you know, organizing these events for a long time. But it's just me and my computer and my wife and a couple friends and some volunteers that make these races happen. So I thought if I came to Spartan that I could watch and learn. This is the largest endurance company on the planet. You know, imagine that. I don't even know how many races they put on. I should know. But
250.
250.
It was in the media guide.
Yeah. Maybe I should have read the media guide. 250 races worldwide.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The logistics involved and just transporting. Just think about that. How do they get all of this equipment from place to place? How do they know?
I lost my ass doing that, going around the country trying to, because I didn't know. It's crazy.
How do they know how many helmets they have, construction helmets versus DOT helmets that you wear when you're driving in a UTV? How do they know how many UTVs they have or how much gas is in each one of those things? How do they know how many zip ties they have or they need?
That is crazy. The zip ties on the little signs down there. I literally was thinking, first of all, you need a whole truck just for the signs.
They have a traveling hardware store.
Do they really?
Yeah, man. A diesel trailer, a truck and trailer. It's like going into Home Depot. And you walk up and there's a person in there that tracks every single thing that goes in and out of that trailer. And anything you need, you walk up and say, you know, I need a zip tie. And they'll say, what size? 6-inch, black or white? Black.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's one component of this thing. Think about the merchandise. Think about the announcers, the DJs, all the electrical equipment that's involved to do that. It's massive.
Yeah.
It's.
And then you have to serve your sponsors and make sure all of that messaging's getting out.
It's amazing to watch.
Yeah.
From the outside looking in, and now from the inside looking in, I'm learning so much, and that's one of the reasons again why I wanted to be part of this, is to educate myself. I think it's going to make me a better race director, better business person, and it's super cool to watch.
You're doing great, man. Like the course, I had a chance to go run the course before just to check it out, and just the flow of it as a runner is awesome, and just being able to put on different hats because you have to do all of it right now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been great. When they started the project, they reached out to Charlie Engel and me and said that they were going to put on a series of 10Ks, and they asked if we would be involved with marketing, you know, get out there and talk about it. try to invite some of our friends to come and run these things. So, you know, Charlie and I, we enjoy that kind of stuff. So we said, yeah, we'll do that. But then that quickly escalated into, well, would you produce the races? Would you actually go out and create the courses and mark the courses and, you know, conduct the race? And I said, heck yeah, man. Are you kidding me? So it's great. And you get it, for me personally, think about my life. So they say, okay, we're going to put on a race in Monterey, California. So, all right, great. So we want you to go there and run for 2 days. Just go to the Toro Park and just find 6 miles of trail that connects and makes sense to you. So I'm like, wait a minute, you guys are just going to let me go to Monterey and let me design a course for your customers? Yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that. So I get to go and, you know, get paid to run for 2 days by myself on a cool trail in a beautiful park, and then create a map and present that to them. Then they approve it, and then they make it available to the public. And then about 3 days before the actual race, then they send myself and our co-RD, Sean Garbutt. Sean and I show up. We get all the supplies we need. We mark the course, and then we conduct the race itself. We help with awards. Then we go clean the race course up, put everything away, and then get ready for the next one. So it's a pretty cool process for us. I think I have the best job in the world.
That's awesome. As yesterday when you're starting the race and you get on the mic, and I mean, there are some unique challenges when you share parts of courses with the Spartan.
And when you share cultures too.
Yeah, for right? Sure. Because there's a huge crossover. But you guys marked it with big old red flags, and I think you told the runners at least 30 times
right.
That flags will be on your right. And I was like just laughing. But the funniest thing that you... the best part of that little speech right there, besides the fact that it was about the snow and destroyer, right, was when you said that you have one important thing for everybody. My name is Louis Espor. You can find me on Instagram at... That was a good line. Did you have that ready?
No, that just happened.
That's a good one.
Well, because they're whispering in my ear as I'm talking to all 500 of you. They're whispering in my ear, you know, be sure to mention our title sponsor, Ultra. Be sure to talk about Trail Runner Magazine. You know, and I'm like... Okay, but I also want to talk to them about the race. I want to make sure that everybody has a good experience. And as you know, putting on events, everybody's excited and all jacked up, and you're standing there in the starting corral, and you should be listening to what the race director's saying. They're not just talking to talk. They're giving you some pretty important instructions. But probably 80% of the people are not hearing it.
So no.
No, they're hearing it, but they're not listening.
Yeah.
And then, then they wander off and onto the course, and then they get lost. And they get lost because they weren't listening, or they're not understanding how the course is marked.
Right.
So we came up with this idea for Spartan that we're going to only mark the right-hand side of the trail. So any event you go to anywhere in the country that's a Spartan trail, the markers are only on the right-hand
That's cool.
side. And at this time, the markers are only red. So we can say red is right. And I'm just keep repeating that over and over at the starting corral, and hopefully everybody gets it in their heads that red is right.
Yeah.
And then there's no questions. Just keep the markers on your right.
I would like to say from experience, if you are a runner that happens to get lost in a race with 500 people, and you are the only one to get lost, it is not anyone else's fault. You got to own that one person.
You know, as a good business person and a customer service thought... when somebody comes to me and says, you know, I missed that turn, and then they always exaggerate. I was 6 miles off course. No, you weren't, but okay. I missed that turn. This, you know, you didn't mark this course well, and blah, blah, blah. And I never say this, but I want to say, okay, dude, 299 people made
I've
that
said it
turn.
Before.
Like, one guy.
Yeah.
One guy missed that turn. Do you know who that guy is? Yeah, you.
You got to say it.
I can't.
You got to.
Usually what happens is people just have their heads down, they're running hard,
yeah.
And they're just out of their minds, and they blow right through an obviously marked section.
And trail's different than road. Like, you're trying not to break your ankle or bust your face half the time,
sure.
Especially on the downhill, so it could be easier to miss. But
well, let me say this to all the runners out there that are listening, especially trail runners. Getting lost, it's kind of part of the game. You know, nobody wants to get lost, but it's inevitable. I mean, you're running around, especially the longer the distance is. And if you don't know the course, it's kind of your responsibility to know the course. But yeah, I mean, it's just part of the game. It's like baseball, you know, someone's calling balls and strikes and you don't always agree with them. And sometimes it can impact the game. And that's how it is. And that's how it is in trail running. You're going to get lost. You're going to fall down. You're going to fall in some water. You're going to get poison oak. You're going to see a snake. You're going to get lost.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about a little bit about your podcast with Spartan.
That's a whole new experience too. So, you know, I'm not a podcaster. I'm a photographer and trail runner. And, my Spartan friends thought that it would be a good idea that we host a podcast. So it was a Trail Talk with Lewis and Charlie. So they bought us a Zoom recorder like you have here and three microphones and some headphones and said, go out and interview people. And we had no instructions. So we were listening to podcasts on how to podcast. But what we do have is the sponsorship of the largest endurance company on the planet. So we have Spartan helping us out. Trail Runner Magazine is one of our presenting sponsors, and Ultra Running, the shoe company. And so we have this ability to draw and communicate with like the best endurance runners on the planet. You know, yeah. We talked to Camille Herron, we talked to Scott Jurek, we talked to Zach Bitter a couple weeks ago. Like I said, Wardian was just in here. I'm going to be talking to Kara Goucher later today. When you ask somebody to do a podcast interview and you tell them, you know, who you're with, they say yes.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. We've conducted, I don't know, probably 20 interviews so far.
Nice.
Yeah. And so you can find it on the Spartan website, spartan.com/trail. And there you can see the Spartan Trail schedule. And I'm pretty sure you can connect to Trail Talk with Lewis and Charlie, or just Google it. It's all over the place.
Yeah. The shows, I've listened to a couple, that you guys are having fun.
Well, the first ones are rough. If you want to learn how not to conduct an interview, listen to the very first.
Do you think they are?
Yeah, because Charlie and I, we like to talk a lot. And I listen to those interviews, and him and I are just on top of one another. You know, like he starts a sentence and I jump in, and I start a sentence and he jumps in, and we're both trying to take control of this thing. And then the guest is just looking at us like, you guys are dumb. You don't even know what the hell you're doing. So the first ones are pretty rough, but then we settle down and we're giving each other much more space. And fortunately for Charlie, he hasn't been around. He has a big project right now. He's in Africa running. I think he was supposed to be here in Squaw Valley this week, but the last thing I saw, he was on the top of Kilimanjaro like, you know, a week ago or so. Oh, nice. So I don't even know where he's at. So
was he doing the lowest to highest point thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's doing the lowest to highest human powered, you know, trek on all of the continents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he started with Africa. I don't know the routes exactly, but
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, right now, Trail Talk is just Trail Talk with Lewis, because I don't know where Charlie's at. But I suppose when he gets back, we reconnect.
That could be a fun little segment, though. Yeah. Where is he? Just read a couple of his last posts and just let people know.
Yeah. Our next adventure together, I believe, is we're going to Estes Park, Colorado, for the U.S. Trail Running Conference.
Yeah.
That's coming up.
I've been a couple times.
Yeah, it's coming up in a few weeks or a couple of weeks. And so we're going to go to that, and I think we're going to sit on some panels and talk with other race directors, and then I'm sure we'll conduct a couple of podcast interviews. Hopefully he's there, Charlie. If not, you know, I'll just wing it on my own.
Yeah. Have you been to Estes Park before?
Mm-mm, no.
That's pretty. Yeah. Where are they? I think we were
at that hotel that from The Shining. What's the name of that hotel?
The Stanley.
The Stanley. Yeah, that's where it's going to be.
Yeah, that's where they had last time. It's pretty cool. Like, there's some old cricket. You can't help, if you've ever seen the movie, thinking about this place.
Of course.
You're walking around, and everybody thinks it's haunted anyway.
Right.
You know? But it's laid back. It's not a huge event, but it's all the trail. It's the culmination.
I attended that conference last year. They actually did it in San Luis Obispo. They switched
did they?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so I got to, but I just ran in and out. I was on a panel, and I was on my way to Squamish or Whistler to shoot a job. So I just rolled into San Luis, and then I was there for half a day, and then off to my next thing. But it was pretty cool, yeah, because there was trail race directors from all over the country, a lot of vendors. It was a good thing. So the U.S. or the American Trail Runner or the U.S. Trail ATRA? Running Conference. Yeah.
Is it ATRA? Oh, U.S. Yeah. That's what it is. And it's sponsored by ATRA.
That's right. That's what it is.
So I have a couple other two questions. One about your photography business and then one about your events, because I'm kind of curious. I haven't talked to you before about these. So photography, this is kind of a selfish question, but how have phones and the technology changed your business? Have you had to up your game because you know there's so much media out there, or like what?
Yeah. So when I, you know, I'm old, right? So I'm 56, going to be 57 pretty soon. When I started photography, I'm going to sound like old grandpa. Back in the days when we had film cameras, but when I was young and, you know, like in high school, I'm shooting with, you know, 35 millimeter film cameras. And then as I became, you know, started a portrait studio, and we were working with medium format cameras, so Hasselblads, 2.25 by 2.25 square negatives, you know, big film. And I made a living with those Hasselblad cameras for like 25 years. And then digital photography started happening. And at first, it was a gimmick kind of a thing. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
It used to be that a small town portrait photographer was there to document everything, your family life, your family portrait, your kids, graduations, and important moments in your life. And that's what we did, because people didn't have the ability to do that on their own. Now everybody has a fantastic camera in their pocket. So there's certain things that they don't need a professional photographer for. So what changed is I realized that I need to be working for people that need what I do, not want what I do.
Right.
And who needs what I do? Companies, businesses. They don't have the time or the desire to do the type of photography that I can provide.
Yeah.
So it just meant switching. It just meant sort of changing our target, changing the customers that we had. So no more photographing babies and high school graduations. Yeah. Now photographing construction projects and photographing. I do a lot of stage work. I work for a theater company and for an opera and for a dance company.
Cool.
So yeah, we just had to change more commercial and marketing targeted, as opposed to like residential photography. So that's what changed for me.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, smart. I mean, if you love what you're doing, and you know, you've got to pivot a little bit.
But what's going on with me right now with my photography business is I'm just so deeply involved with running and race coordination and race directing that my photography is still happening for sure, but just not as much.
Yeah.
In fact, just today, I have a very good friend and customer asked me to do a job in November, and I'm not going to be able to go because I'm involved with some other race stuff.
Yeah. So here's a question for people who are taking pictures with their phones.
Get closer. Get closer.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah. So just get closer to the subject, for sure.
What are you saying? Like what?
Because people tend to be super far away, and the lens on the camera is on the phone is. It's like a normal lens. It's almost wide to normal focal length. So you can just get closer. Fill the frame. Use the whole frame, not just a portion of the frame. And then eliminate distractions. So when you're looking through your camera, look at all the elements that you see. And is this element essential to the story that you're trying to tell? So if you're taking a picture of your kid at their birthday party and they're blowing out candles, get close, because the story is the kid, the candle, the cake, not the refrigerator and the microwave and the TV in the background.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is that the question you were going to ask?
Yeah, it is. I think especially for like, you know, people out here on the course who bring their cameras with them and post 500 pictures and like there's two good ones.
Right.
You know, like just take 10 good ones and we'll be good.
Well, that's the beauty of it too. I mean, you can just rapid fire and something good's going to be in there, I suppose.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know... The technique, composition, and all of that is certainly key. But for our personal phones, what really matters is you're just documenting what's real and what's important to you. So it really doesn't matter about the photographic rules. Just capture the content.
Do you know the comedian Norm MacDonald?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He does a bit about that, yeah?
It's the best bit ever. He's talking about, like, back in the 50s when they used to have one crappy picture of the family and be like, hey, everybody, come look at my crappy picture of my family. And he's like, today, he's like, hey, come look at 10,000 pictures of my family. It's funny. All right, so last thing before you go probably work and I go catch a flight here. Born to Run Ultras?
Well, so, yeah, that's the other component of my world is the little races that my wife and I own. So that business is called All We Do Is Run. So you can check us out, allwedoisrun.com. And, there you'll find the Santa Barbara Red Rock 50-miler, the Santa Barbara Nine Trails 35-mile, back on the ranch, which is a timed event, a 48, 24, 12, 6-hour timed run. And then, sort of our marquee event is the Born to Run Ultra Marathon that happens in the spring on a private cattle ranch in Los Olivos, so deep in the northern Santa Barbara wine country. It's a multi-day running festival is what it's turned into. It started off as a camp trip with me and a few friends running. We had access to this ranch, and so we were just there camping, playing guitars, drinking beers, and running laps around this ranch. And then there was, eight or nine of us. Last year there was about 1,700 of us. So the event has really grown.
Yeah, I'd say.
And it's changing, and it's changing people's lives. And it's a running event, but it's also a festival. It's art, it's music, it's tattoos, it's food, it's running games, it's drinking games, it's wrestling, it's it's hatchet throwing, it's Barbie car racing, it's a talent show, it's a prom, it's all of that.
It's freaking Burning Man for running.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
You come and check it out.
Josue's invited me like 3 times, and it's never worked out. I'll have to come out there.
Josue's a big part of it, yeah. He's one of the stars of the show.
I want to see him wrestle. What's his wrestling name?
I don't know that he has a wrestling name, but there's a lot of wrestling with the luchador masks and the capes and the whole thing. Like, serious. We have a mat, and people freaking wrestle. We have yoga. Oh, this year too, we had a Lego lava walk or a Lego lava run. Yeah, that's so great. We had all these Legos, put them out on a tarp. It was like 10 yards of Legos.
And is it kid friendly?
Yeah, some of it.
Medium?
Some of it. What's cool about it is, I mean, it's a big ranch, right? So you can camp or set up wherever you want. So if you want to be in the vortex, if you want to be in the swill, you can do that. But then if you just want to be sleeping in a hammock, drinking an iced tea over there under an oak tree, you can do that too.
Nice.
So yeah, there are activities that are geared specifically for kids. It can get wild too, like at nighttime. Saturday night, it's probably, you don't want your kids around there.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
It's dog friendly too. If they're on a leash and they're cool. If they're mean dogs, they can't be there.
Do you have like a loop out
there? Yeah, yeah. It's 2 10-mile loops that meet in the center. In the center is the main camp. And there's just, campers, trailers, tents, hobos sleeping on the grass, whatever. It could be somebody who rolls in a 45-foot luxury bus, and then literally some hobo dude just hitchhiked in, and he's just there.
How many years have you been doing it now?
I think we're on year 11, something like that.
Is the ranch ever going to kick you out?
I don't think so, because I think they like money, and so we give them quite a bit. They're into it. Yeah, they like it. Actually, they like it. They come out and watch, too. And
yeah.
It's pretty nice. In fact, you know what? Spartan is hosting a race there at the same ranch.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, the Chamberlain Ranch in Los Olivos. So in December of this year, there's going to be a Spartan race there, and it's going to be the trail championships.
We have about
$30,000 on the line prize money
for
a half marathon and a 10K.
Oh, hell yeah.
I want to mention another race, two races that I'm involved in that I don't own, but I work for them. One is the Morro Bay Triathlon, believe it or not. That happens in November, and they hired me to help them and be the race director for this triathlon, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool.
It's a whole other culture.
That's the one.
Yeah, the Big Rock. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It starts and finishes right there.
That's cool.
Embarcadero, Morro Bay. Pretty stoked about that. But then there's this other thing that's in the works right now. And maybe by the time this podcast is produced, we'll have more information about it. But Google Snowman Trek. So snowman, like a snowman that you make in the snow. Trek. Snowman Trek. Google that. check out that trail. It's 300 kilometers in Bhutan.
That's a bucket list place for me.
Yeah, dude. And so listen to this. The Bhutanese government they want to host a race on this. The Snowman Trek is like their John Muir Trail. It's like their pride and joy of this country. And it like borders Nepal and China. And so they want to put on a 300K race.
Wow.
And they've already set a date. It's October 13th, 2020. This race is going to happen.
Wow.
It's going to be very limited. It's going to be about 25 to 30 people total. And it's 300 kilometers, fully supported. There's going to be guides for each of the runners. It'll be optional. You can have a guide if you like. It's going to be 5 days of continuous running. It's about 60 kilometers a day. And it's in Bhutan. And they've hired me to be the international race director. So I'm going to go there and help them make this thing happen. In fact, I'm going to Bhutan in November this year to go run a chunk of the course and to meet these folks and to sit on a couple of committees and make this thing happen. So anyway, check it out. Snowman Trek is the name of the trail, but we have a website that's up, Snowman Run. So snowmanrun.com, and you can see some photos and a little bit of the logistics of this thing.
What are the restrictions to traveling in Bhutan these days?
So that's key.
Yeah.
So you can't just go to Travelocity and book a flight into Thimphu, which is where the airport is. You can't do that. You have to go through the government, and there's a visa process, and then there's visa fees, daily fees that you pay to be there. So it's not impossible to travel to Bhutan, but it's very, very difficult. It's a remote country. It's a very small country. I've been there once before. I ran the Bhutan International Marathon in 2017. That's how I met these folks. So that's the challenge, is getting there. But here's the deal. With this Snowman Run, we're going to help with all of that. So we have – everything is going to be in place that you'll be able to register and pay one fee to the race, and that fee will include your travel inside of the country.
Oh, that's
cool. You get to Bhutan and then – or you get to a connecting country, like maybe you go into Beijing or into Bangkok, and then from there you get into a Bhutanese plane that takes you into Bhutan. Anyway, long explanation. It will all be worked out, and it'll be simple, and it'll be easy, and it will not be as expensive as you think it is.
Really?
So that's part of the reason why I'm going over there, to talk to these folks and try to create a method that makes it seamless and simple for somebody like you that might want to come and check it out.
That's awesome, man. Lewis, thanks for your time, buddy. All we do is run.
All we do is run.com.
Spartan Trail.
Spartan Trail.
Trail Lewis, Talk.
Trail Talk with Lewis and Charlie.
Bhutanese National.
Snowman Run. And Reflections Photography Studio in Santa Maria, California. That's my home base.
And founder of Running Burning Man. Hopefully nobody dies at that thing.
Hey, you know what? Thanks for letting me come and talk with you. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Good luck. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Yeah, man.